You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Obviously, it's, I suppose, in a sense, a fait accompli now. We all have to deal with the 1 percentage point increase in VAT that has now kicked in. But the question is, was it necessary in the first place? And also, is it inherently regressive or is it not necessarily regressive? And this thing about zero-rated tonton, is the right basket of goods actually being zero-rated at all to make sure that the poorest of the poor don't find themselves in a pickle, or, well, if they can still afford a pickle after the increase in VAT? And I've got a panel here of excellent economists, and we're going to be talking about the impact of VAT, particularly ordinary South Africans, and also just whether or not this form of taxation was a tool that the government had to, that was forced by circumstance in terms of the shape of our economy at present, to choose, or could they have avoided it? Okay, I want to introduce you to two of my favorite economists, and they've been on the show before, and wonderful to have both of them in studio with me, Tabi Leoka. Tabi, hello.
Hi, Yusubis.
Thanks for making time for us.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
I'm glad you haven't forgotten us now that you have friends in high places. Inside joke. Busi Siwecha Debe is also here, Nedbank economist, of course. Busi Siwe, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
And then on the line, we've got Siya Mbeniza. Siya is Finance and Operations Director at Political Economy Southern Africa. Siya, thanks for being part of this conversation as well.
Thanks, Yusubis.
I'm going to start firstly with you, Tabi, on this one. I mean, to some extent, we now have to live with this reality, right? But many people are still angry and think that this kind of move is clearly anti-poor. And over the weekend, of course, the DA has jumped on the bandwagon. When you're not in government, you can make decisions and call for things to be done that seem quite easy, and suggesting that if they were in government, they'd simply lower it back to where it was in the beginning.
Yeah, it's been very contentious debate. Look, I am in support of the 1 percentage point increase, and that is because we needed to do it. And I will speak in very simple terms, because I think in the past we've spoken as economists and maybe a few people have been lost in the debate.
Yes.
So at the MTBPS, the medium term policy statement, the minister then, Malusi, revealed some very gory numbers. He revealed that we had a revenue shortfall of 50.8 billion rand. Hmm. He also revealed that our debt to GDP ratio is not going to stabilize. It's actually going to increase. And it's going to increase to levels which are very uncomfortable, also at a time where other emerging markets are actually decreasing their debt to GDP. So I have two examples, because everybody just thinks the poor, the poor, the poor, what are we going to do? And I do sympathize with that argument. But here's the thing. Last year, Stats SA released a report that said that over 55% of South Africans are living in poverty. And in that report, they also revealed that about, I think, 13% of South Africans, or a huge chunk of South Africans, are living on 400 and odd rands a month. What was interesting was the reaction that you got from the 1 percentage point increase was far more than the reaction that you got from the day that the report was revealed. And that's when I thought, geez, we need to do something. So the increase in VAT was obviously to solve the problem that we have from a revenue side. And it is as simple as this. Imagine a couple, a married couple, and this married couple has been living above their means. The husband or wife, because I don't want to be sexist, husband or wife, one of them is suddenly not going to Pick and Pay or the ShopRite, but he's buying imported bread from Woolies, imported with dates and pistachios from Dubai, right? It's not necessary, but this guy is buying tons of imported product, cherries from Israel, everything is imported, mainly from Dubai. And yet they're eating out. So no one is actually consuming what has been bought. Suddenly, it gets rotten because it's perishable goods. So you then have to throw it away.
Sounds very familiar.
And then the guy, everybody says, but you can't throw it away. The family says, you can't throw it away. It's waste. It's waste. You know, imagine how rich we would be had you not thrown it away. And that's the argument with, oh, but we can't, you know, there was corruption in the past. We can't solve the corruption of the past by increasing VAT. It has happened. We are now solving something that has happened. Example number two, okay. Same couple. I'm almost done. Same couple. The guy says, one of them, husband or wife, says to the other, I'm giving you 3 months. 3 months to divorce you. I'm telling you this. I've put you on a 3-month probation because you are a reckless spender. We are now broke. You are corrupt. There's fruitless and wasteful spending. And then the other one, in 3 months, decides enough is enough. I'm going to show him. I'm going to prove it to him that I am worthy of being in this marriage. That's our relationship with Moody's. It took us then 3 months to solve certain issues at a time when, during that 3 months, sure, we were knocked with the fee-free education that was unexpected. So you have, you know, a very bad situation where you're between the rock and the hard place in terms of being in the National Treasury. You're given 3 months and you have to do something. Mm. You increase VAT by a percentage point and to solve the issue, because you're going to get divorced. Mm. And actually the impact of a divorce on you is far higher than impact on a 1 percentage point increase. Mm. The other thing is, there's hysteria over this 1 percentage point increase. It's almost as if people are reading it as the government is taking it and taking it to Dubai, mm, right? Actually, it can be progressive. If you take that money that you've collected from everyone versus the 15% that actually contribute to taxes that you've been taxing over the years, you take it from everyone and you direct it to pro-poor policies. That's when the poor are not impacted give it to the very people it's targeted.
Sure. Okay, and we're going to come to whether that is likely, because some people will say, okay, that's fine in principle, but then it is all contingent upon you actually then having a state that is in fact pro-poor. Busisiwe, I saw you nodding in agreement there with the divorce analogy. That resonates as a compelling reason why we need to accept this as necessary.
I mean, you seriously, let me put a spanner sort of in the works and just like, what, be the cat among the pigeons. I think the wealthiest 30% of South Africans actually account for, I think, 85% of the VAT. So we're going to argue about that and say how regressive VAT is, firstly. So my nodding was that 30% of the wealthiest South Africans, 85% of the VAT. So I don't know how.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, that was from the budget review. But another thing from the budget review that I read very, very nicely that I actually liked, because you sort of trying to ask us, was it necessary or not necessary to do so? Mm. And Tabi's thing was brilliant. The budget review itself says, increasing taxes in a low growth context when many South Africans are struggling to make ends meet is not desirable. But the fiscal position is substantially weaker than it was at the time of the crisis in 2008. Mm. A failure to act now would lead to more drastic spending cuts and tax increases in the future. I mean, we had to do this. It's like, we can't, as Tabi said, we can't go to the past and go, you know what, we had that revenue shortfall of about 40.8 billion rand.
It can't be undone.
It can't be undone. And there were lots of reasons why we had that revenue shortfall. Mm. Some of it was low growth. I mean, it tells us in the review it was low growth. there was nothing us as consumers can do about that, so we're paying for that. Some of it was just maladministration at SARS, sure, so there was nothing we could do about that. So we had to actually, before that divorce comes, we actually had to make things happen there. Mm. But the other thing that I loved very nicely in the budget review, I think sometimes they try to stab us and put it out there for us all the time. They said, these measures, these tax increases that we're getting, so there were a bunch of them, and one of them was VAT that gave us a 22.9 billion rand.
Yeah.
They said, along with these public spending cuts, will contribute to reducing the budget deficit and funding fee-free higher education and training for the poor and working class students.
Okay.
So nothing is free. So if you wanted that on the one hand and we were not growing, we had to get the money somewhere. So now we're complaining that we actually had to get the money, sort of we got the money this way.
Okay.
But still, 85% of that VAT actually comes from the 30% wealthier South Africans out there. But we'll do the numbers now, and okay. I'll show you how.
Okay, let me bring you in here, Sia. I have to confess, after listening to the explanations from Tabi and Busisiwe, I'm excited about paying this 1 percentage point in VAT. Do you concur with our marriage counselors here in the studio?
I seem to disagree, CBS. I think from my perspective, also having worked at the National Treasury and understanding the budget framework and everything, I don't think that it was necessary to implant such a permanent type of fix. You know, the issue with the VAT is that there's so many, all of these other associated costs of implementing it, you know, administrative cost of adjusting prices. We already saw that on the 1st of April, a lot of the retail outlets had not even adjusted prices on the shelves, and we saw notices at every till point that, you know, the price difference is a result of VAT. And what this creates is a sort of hysteria amongst consumers. And I think even though you might come from the point of view that 85% of VAT contributors are the wealthiest 30% in South Africa, the increase in VAT also does fall through into the informal market because of the perception and as a result of people sourcing from larger retailers and passing on the price increase on consumers, regardless of whether the informal sector, informal traders are actually contributing to VAT, which might be a sort of statistical gap. My biggest concern is that we're discussing the VAT increase as though it is the only type of measure that Malusi Gigaba introduced in February, the budget in February. But, you know, there are a vast number of other additional sort of consolidatory type of measures, the increase on the on personal and you know, corporate tax, personal income tax, sorry, the increase on fuel levy, and a number, and you know, sin tax, etc. So there's been a range of other tax interventions which I think are far more efficient as a, you know, temporary gap to deal with the shortfall in government revenue. But I think VAT as a permanent measure, you know, it's a long term and it's a structural change. I'm not sure whether it was necessary. But also, if you look at some of the matching social interventions that are put in place, we see that over the next 3 years, government's planning on increasing things like, you know, the child welfare grant by about 10 rand this year, 20 rand, 30 rand over the next 3 years. And to me, that's not sort of redistributing the regressive impact of the VAT increase. Yes, the National Treasury has announced that it is now establishing a committee to review the 19 products that are zero rated and see whether they would need to be increased, etc. But typically these types of consultations don't include the poor, so you don't get an understanding of what is the consumption profile of the poorest South Africans. But also, as mentioned, because the VAT increase is not just contained within the formal market or the formal economy in South Africa, it has an impact on the informal economy, which may not necessarily contribute to VAT collection, but also has a direct impact on the poorest in terms of them being able to access consumption goods. So I think it's been very clear. You know, the VAT increase has got a regressive impact. If you look at the Davies Tax Commission reports, it's very clearly stated there. However, the attraction of the VAT, you know, increase is that it's a much more efficient increase. When you look at the report by the Davies Tax Commission, they compared a increase in corporate or income tax to a 3% increase. So they modeled what would you need to increase corporate or personal income tax by in order to raise the same amount of money that a 3% VAT increase would raise. And it turns out that a 3% VAT increase would need or would be matched by a 5 or 6% individual increase in either corporate income tax or personal income tax.
Before we take a break, Sia, how do you square the last... Hold on. Let's slow down those points so that people can understand. The last point that you made, how do you square that with the first one, by the way? If your beef was that on day one that there were apparently near intractable administrative problems, but you end up agreeing that at least one upside with this mechanism is the incredible efficiency as a tax collection method?
Yes, so I think so. It's always a balancing fact. So I think personally, the VAT increase should not have been in place. It's a permanent measure for a temporary problem we're facing with the fiscus. But on the other end, because of compliance to VAT, etc., it's much more efficient because you can gather a lot more money when you compare it to personal or corporate income tax. And so it's a balancing factor of these. My biggest concern is that you have this 1% VAT increase, but the concomitant increases in social expenditure do not make up for the regressive impact of the VAT increase. So the money lost by the poor in terms of the VAT and consumption is not matched by social spending in order to increase living standards.
I get you. And I'm going to put that to Tabi and to Busi here in the studio, who the only point I think, at least from the corner of my left eye, I can see Busi Siwe agreeing with you is on the efficiency of this method. But the rest of them, high corner, you should see the facial expression. So let's have a debate. But first, let's do a bit of shopping.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
25 minutes after 10, we're discussing the impact of VAT on all South Africans, but in particular the most vulnerable. And we're asking whether it is regressive. And even though it's water under the bridge, could there have been alternatives? And there's so much there that Sia has given us to chew on. And also some wonderful and reasonable disagreement between my three excellent economists that I have for this panel discussion. Tabi, where shall we begin? Shall we begin with this question that of whether other ways of collecting taxes could have been, I don't know, have had less regressive impact?
Yeah, so studies have shown that actually increases in the non-direct taxes, so fuel tax, custom duties, electricity levy, sugar tax, all these other little taxes that we've been increasing and concentrating on in the past, can be more regressive than a 1 percentage point increase. The other thing is that we're still increasing some of these taxes, so they are going to be increased, or they are as of 1st of February. But the other thing that SIA doesn't also, and here's where the numbers come through. So 27% of, so personal income tax is about 37%, VAT 25%, corporate income tax about 18%. If you look at last year, tax performance relative to budget. Personal income tax, there was a decline of 21%. So it undershot by 21%. VAT by 13%. Corporate. So it actually, the only one that was a positive is the fuel levy. So already, even if we had to increase personal income tax, we have a country that has, including, if you include discouraged workers, over 35% of unemployed people in the country. So here's why there's also arguments of why corporate income tax wasn't increased, because you've got, why are you not punishing, so to speak, the rich?
Yeah, and a couple of people are asking on Twitter specifically to you whether you think corporate taxes should have been hiked.
So corporate tax in South Africa is 28%, right? But corporates globally are not sympathetic to whether you're an emerging market or a developed country, whether you have a Cyril Ramaphosa or a Nelson Mandela. Corporates invest because they're attracted by less taxes, ease of doing business, how long it takes to register a company in that country. So ours is 28%. The US has reduced theirs from 35% to 21%.
Okay.
The UK has reduced theirs from 30% to 19%. China's one is 25%. So globally, when companies are looking at where to invest and where to go, you don't want to penalize them, because these are also people who bring revenues increase in terms of, because they pay taxes when they come to the country. They also employ South Africans. They upskill. So you don't want to kill the cow that feeds you. So that's why I think corporate income tax is not a tax that Treasury would have increased. We know why PIT, personal income tax, has been increased over the years. And I think that you are really putting pressure on the very few who are already contributing to the tax base. So I'm all in support of the 1% support, given that, and as Busi said earlier, we are also in a crisis situation. This is not Nirvana. Yeah. We have to make drastic measures to suit the current situation that we're in, or to solve the situation that we're in.
Okay. We're going to go to EWN headlines, but as we do so, Busi, can I ask you to think about this question in relation to what Sia had said? I'm very curious at a very interesting claim that Sia made, which, if it is true, surely shows that this is an anti-poor mechanism, that if you look at the consumption patterns of poor people in the country, that effectively the cost of living will have shot up because the amount of money spent on social security and pro-poor policies do not sufficiently offset how much of the wages that a poor person gets, if they are employed at all, will now go to pay more at the till as a result of this 1 percentage point increase. And that's quite an interesting claim. Half past.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
We're in conversation with three economists, Thabi Leoka, Busisiwe Khadebe, and also with Sia Beniza. And we are talking about VAT, the percentage point increase. What will be the consequences from an empirical economics point of view? And is it necessarily regressive or anti-poor? Now, I'd asked you that question, Busi. Let's just go back to that. I mean, Sia said something very interesting. And in simple terms, if I understood him correctly with my liberal arts hat, the idea is that effectively the expenditure that is pro-poor expenditure on the part of the state does not sufficiently offset how much the cost of living will now have increased for many poor people. And if that statement is true, that sounds to me regressive.
I mean, if you look at just the numbers, if you look at, if I had 1 rand before and it was VAT inclusive, 14% VAT, and now at 15% VAT, that same 1 rand, if I now add the 15% VAT, is going to be 1 rand and 0.87685 cents. So it's 1 cent more. So I think for someone poor, that's a big deal. So it's we shouldn't actually take that out. But if you think about sort of what this adds to the bigger basket, it is actually still smaller than the increase that we're going to get in social grants percentage-wise. But so if you look at it that way, it's really, CI is probably not, if I look at the social grant percentage increase and I look at this percentage increase on that 1 rand, this one is way less than the social grant.
CI, your maths is failing you.
But the other thing, no, I'm with you, Sia. Don't worry, I'm coming there. So we've just done the numbers.
Nominal figures.
I just did a 1 rand example, percentage. But Sia, I am in agreement with you. I just want to use another example. Someone asked me last week to actually look at our social grants, and they asked me to actually find out why our social grants are unconditional. Sort of, we don't tell people, if I give you a social grant, you must buy a loaf of bread, your kid must go to school, and you must go get immunizations and stuff. And in Brazil, a lot of the times, the social grants there are conditional. And I was trying to figure out now, why did South Africa decide to do this? And one of the arguments, which they had the economics arguments and whatever, and one of the arguments that came out there was by telling people what to do with their social grant money, we are saying that the poor are so because of their behavior. Where we know on the other side that sometimes the system has just failed them. And that's what you're saying, Sia. The poorest live furthest away from where they need to work. So the system has failed them. So they use a lot of the money for that.
Yes.
So the poor are just the system has actually failed them. So this is a case of the system having failed the poor. We are in a mess, basically, and we had to get this money somehow. So I'm with you there, that the system, but it's not so much that, but the whole system. So see, it's not only that VAT increase. It's what led us to actually get that VAT increase that has actually put that the poor in that weird situation. But I get what you're saying. But we must also go back and say, why are we here to begin with? And it had nothing, the poor did nothing wrong, yeah? There were just other things going on. So when it comes to that growth thing, I mean, we know, on the one side, it could be, you know what, we're not creating jobs in this country. So if we're not creating jobs in this country, we must actually, the people that are already in jobs, we must try to tax them more somehow. And we got a bit of that with the tax brackets in this situation where we got that 6.8 billion rand there. So somehow we must tax them more, but we must try to find money elsewhere instead of creating a whole lot of jobs so that we have a whole lot of extra people so we can tax them more when it comes to personal income taxes. So the system has failed. Why haven't we created those jobs?
Okay. Sia, you want to revise your numbers?
No. I still stand quite firmly. Look, I think the problem with the South African fiscal issue is not necessarily a collections. I think it's two issues that are affecting us. It's a leakage in terms of our expenditure. You know, the whole state capture saga is unearthed. You know, 300 million here, 400 million here, a couple of billion here that have been lost through public procurement. Yeah. And I think that is a huge problem in terms of the fiscal leakage that it creates. Because if you look at the numbers in terms of the collections and revenue, we've seen a steady growth. Yes, things have declined under Moyane's term, but the revenue in terms of total government revenue in current terms has increased by an average of about 10.3%. Act from 2008 to about 2014-15 when Moyane came into office. And then from 2014 up to where we are, it's increased at about 7%. So the issue is not necessarily on collections. It's actually an issue of expenditure. Then on the other end, we have a problem with slow growth. And this is fundamentally why I disagree that the VAT was necessary, because we're still trying to see the first, you know, round of impacts of the fiscal consolidation that we've been put under since Pravin Gordhan's term, where there's been a moratorium on employment in the state, etc., and other measures to consolidate the fiscal gap. But
Sia, just to be clear, are you saying plainly that we could and should have waited first to see what the effect of that is?
Exactly. And I disagree completely with the notion that corporates don't really care about the political impact. And I think that what we've seen through the Zuma term, at least the last term, is that the political uncertainty created by, you know, his way of dealing with ministers and the reshuffles, etc., has created such a high political premium that we've seen the exchange rate decline by over 2 rand, and I'm not sure what that is in percentage terms, overnight when we resolved the issue of political uncertainty. So I believe that we have gone into a number of fiscal consolidation measures, and I don't think that the VAT increase was necessary. There are a number of other, you know, measures that have been taking place, other taxes that have increased, and other taxes that are still to come online, such as the carbon tax and sugar tax. And I think that without the VAT increase, we would have avoided a downgrade, particularly because international investors in the global, you know, economy is much more concerned about the impact of political uncertainty, which has largely been resolved at the 52nd ANC conference last year.
Okay, well, Tabi, notwithstanding the fact that your marriage analogy has gone viral, Sia is suggesting that we were not 3 months away from a divorce.
Mm-mm. Never. And even in the Moody's a note, when they did on the Friday, they released a note, and it played a significant role. They put us on. They said, "Look, we are divorcing you as a couple. The couple would divorce in 3 months unless you sort your house out. Okay. You know, put your house in order." The other thing that Sia mentioned earlier was that the panel that is being put together is not going to look at the poor. See, the problem with assumptions is that you assume things that are incorrectly. Actually, the panel will be looking at the poor. The panel will be doing a lot of groundwork, speaking to the poor, understanding their consumption needs, and that study will then contribute to an increase in the zero-rated basket.
Isn't that why shouldn't it have been the other way around? You first speak to the poor.
Yeah, so
observe
they
them if you want
poor.
To. Even if you want to anthropologize them, anthropologize them first, and then come up with your list of zero rated items.
But here's the
right?
thing, Eusebius and CM. Yeah? You're speaking to me as an economist. I'm not a politician, right? So, and that's where, Sia, you would know this as national, if you worked in National Treasury. National Treasury reacts to policy that has been stated, it doesn't create policy at all. So, if this is where we are, and we have to solve this problem that we are faced with, what do we do? So just like the education one, just like land was announced at the ANC policy. Only after its announcement are there discussions on how we will do it, and whether we can, you know, whether it will be impactful or not. So not only now, and yet
it wasn't announced by the ANC.
No, but it's not. It's a reaction to policies over which you mentioned, actually, that have happened and things that have happened in the past 10 years that have led us to be, that led us to this position that we find ourselves.
It led us
to this huge shortfall that we find ourselves, this huge deficit that we find ourselves.
It's a minor point, but it's also a big point, if I understand Tabi correctly, that the truth of the matter is that the technocrats now have to mop up some of the procedural lack of finesse on the part of the politicians in terms of each of the steps that should have been followed. But one has to deal with the reality that you have rather than the one you wish you had.
That's true.
My point is, I think we could have waited a while. We would, you know, see a growth
and it'd be downgraded.
Which then allows you to recover in terms of the fiscal gap. I don't think that we were at the point where, I mean, the major issue that the international investors and the rating agencies were concerned about is this issue around political uncertainty and the impact of politics on the fiscus. But my view is that, look, what we should do is to try and recover all the money that have been leaked through improper, state procurement, etc., through the legal system, instead of, you know, making consumers pay for poor public and fiscal mismanagement by our politicians and those involved in the state.
Tell me very quickly, because I want to take the listeners as well. Could we have waited a little while? And was it possible to also put on the list of how to boost what is in the fiscus? Recouping money lost through corruption.
No, Eusebius, that wasn't. But I think SIA's got this idea that we could have raised other taxes to get us the 22.9 billion rand that the VAT got us in. I'm going to, SIA, now hear the numbers. So I looked at all the other tax proposals and how much money they gave us in. Like, if I look at the sort of the health promotion levy, the sugar tax, it's only 1.9 billion rand. If those excise duties on tobacco, 0.4 billion rand. Those on alcohol, 0.9 billion rand. The biggest of all those suggestions. So if I even go to personal income taxes, 7.5 billion rand. Mm-hmm. For us to close that gap, we needed sort of VAT to come in with 22.9 billion rand. There was no other tax that would have given us that amount of money, Sia. No matter how you look at it, nothing would have given us that amount of money. Because we know it's affecting all South Africans. We're all going to consume, so we're going to get that money there. So this whole thing that we could have waited, no, Sia, you must take the 36 billion rand they had, you must minus the 22.9 billion rand that VAT gave us, and that's all we were going to get in. Moody's was not going to wait. They were going to definitely downgrade us. You can't sit there with that shortfall. So last year's one, and this year we say, students, we're going to give you 57 billion rand over the next 3 years, but we're not actually going to have a big ticket item. That was our big ticket items, yeah.
And without the VAT, we would have been downgraded.
Anyway,
the impact of a downgrade would be far more catastrophic
than an increase in VAT.
Okay, on the very poor.
Hold on, guys. Jeez, let's see your breathe. Shame, man. Maybe the listeners will be on your side. Peter, good morning.
Hi there.
Hi, Peter. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
Right. I don't understand. If certain products are zero rated, to me, it only helps the retailer because there is no price control. So the retailer purchases a cabbage and pays no VAT or brown bread, but he can charge anything he likes for that product. So without price control, how are the poor benefiting from zero rating?
Okay, very good question. Thank you, Peter. Celeste, okay, we've lost Celeste there. Desmond, good morning.
Thank you, Eusebius, and good morning to your guests with high economics, high grade economics. I've got a very simple view on this.
Okay.
And it just comes back to we've been liberated from oppression to slavery because the system, the lady talked about the system is corrupt, right? And we've been mismanaged to such an extent that they have to find money every year. Instead of looking at it and saying, what can we do to reduce the burden? The budget is anti-poor, the way things are structured.
But Desmond, now where must the money come from? Okay, the money's been stolen by the Guptas, by all sorts of other people in the private sector, by wayward people within the state. That money's now gone. So where should we get it from?
Well, now we have to pay. We, the citizens, must pay for the mismanagement of a couple of people sitting at the top. Now, if they had to come and meet us part of the way and say, right, we've got 20 departments here, and we'll cut it down to 10. We'll cut our salaries down, the fat salaries that they earn, and we will take less perks, less free flights, and pay for SAA, and pay for our flights, and take that ministerial handbook and make a briar with it. Then I will be prepared to pay.
Thanks, Desmond. Some higher economics there from you too. I'm loving it. Before I go back to Sia, we're going to take a break. And then I want the two economists in the studio to respond because both listeners asked excellent questions. And in fact, Desmond also reminded me of something that Iraj has been saying. Because Iraj, along the lines of Sia, has been adamant that in fact it is not complicated to have a leaner state and that the efficiency gains would have been very useful. And I'm going to ask both Tabi and Busi whether, in addition to what Sia and Desmond are saying, whether that could have been an alternative way to reduce the pressure on the fiscus.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Man, I haven't enjoyed this much economics since dropping out of third year economics at Rhodes, which these two had taught me, but we were all children at the same time. Tabi and Busi Siwe, obviously I want to bring Sia back in, but Sia, you got some nice backing there from the listeners and me inserting also Iraj into the conversation. And during the break, these wonderfully evidence-sensitive economists have been data mining. Tabi, what are you finding there? Could we, for example, have made the state leaner? And that could have stopped us from having to increase VAT.
Could have, should have, didn't, right? And so now we're in 2018. But it is true. I mean, there's a lot that we should have done. We couldn't and we didn't. And it's all political. And I did mention to you that we are economists, but we're dealing with political consequences. What the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, did announce is that he will make cabinet smaller. And we don't know what he will cut, but here's my suggestion. Small business needs to go. Economic development needs to go. Ministers in the presidency also need to go. I think that you need agencies that are almost like NGOs that work just under government that will do all the research, small business, and all that, rather than have government should be administrative, beef up municipalities, which are currently under financial constraint.
Any projections on how much we'd raise if we did that?
So we don't know yet, but here's the thing that we looked at in the budget. So salaries, for instance, because we do have a bloated government, and this is something that the World Bank even mentioned a couple of years ago. So salaries account for about 525 rounded off billion rands. So if obviously we cut that by half, it'll be a significant gain for the country. So how many of those people in government are actually very efficient? We don't know, but judging from the past 9 years, a lot have not been efficient. A lot have been looting, and we can basically shrink that and make the municipal and local governments run like federal states. Someone asked, why didn't they do it before? We couldn't have done anything before because we had a different administration before. This is the time, and I don't think President Cyril Ramaphosa had enough time to then do a cabinet reshuffle, culling government departments. He didn't have the time. What he does have the time, he will have the time to do so as of next year. And I have no doubt that this is what's in his mind right now. And he's consulting with people on how to go about doing it. You talked about I think Sia talked about this administrative issues with, let's say, VAT. That's just VAT. Imagine the administrative issues relating to redesigning cabinet. Mm. Because you have also some who haven't been totally efficient, but actually have helped a little bit. And now you want to move that to somewhere else. And the political and social impact there won't be any 100% buy-in. Mm. If you remove small business, those who've actually benefited from the Black Industrialist program will then complain to say, so what happens there?
President is a politician, not an economist. You have smaller state. It also means you have fewer positions to divvy up.
Exactly.
I think we need to rein this back because there are people working in those ministries that all of a sudden we're going to make jobless. So how do you do it? And that's going to take long. So you can decide, okay, we're going to cut and reconfigure this. But you must think that it's going to take time. So if Tabi resigns or I don't replace her in that position, if it's not a necessary position, that's just a natural attrition. But that's going to take years. We can't just go and go, we're going to cut here and chop here and whatever. It must actually go on for years. So Raj saying we can just chop and cut here, I think that's going to take years. Imagine, we at the moment, as we speak, we've got the negotiations going on for public sector wages. They've been going on since what? October last year. I wonder if they're going to reach some conclusion. They reached some conclusion yesterday or whatever. They're arguing about that, and they don't want a three-year sort of negotiated sort of salary term anymore. They want a one-year. We are struggling with that, and now you want to fire a whole bunch of people. Mm. I think we need to think about it carefully, that there were sort of more efficient ways of doing this. And again, I want to go back to look at expenditure. See how you are wrong on this one. Expenditure has been cut in this country in every single budget since like 2015. It's ridiculous. So we've cut expenditure. We do not have an expenditure issue. We don't even have a revenue issue. We've got a growth and a jobs issue here. Mm. So now we want to cut off people and we want to say, we've got a jobs issue. So we must, the issue is jobs. It's not so much we've cut that ceiling all the time. And I also want to just affirm what that listener was saying now about we've always been liberated from oppression to say slavery. I mean, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true in a way that I would expect government to create this enabling environment. See, so you're right on this one. The market is looking at what's going on in the politics here. But if you want them to come here and start up a new factory and you want to tax them 35%, I'll take my factory elsewhere where sort of corporate tax rates are actually lower.
Okay.
So they do care. But if you come to touch their pocket there and say, I'm going to charge you more for tax, they're going to leave.
Okay, so yeah, you can have the final say. Is it upon reflection true that we don't have a leakage problem expenditure-wise? We've got an economy problem, a growth problem, jobs problem?
I definitely think we've got both. So I think we cannot ignore the multiple stories that have shown that there's a huge problem of public financial mismanagement. The state capture there, you know, there are many sagas, and there's a huge loss. I mean, the SOEs are in such huge disrepute, and the need for constant being bailed out is, you know, it's a big problem. I think that is not something we can neglect and say it's a purely an issue on the revenue side. But I think also on the revenue side, we've got the problem of slow growth. And what this means is that the government can actually collect less taxes because there's less business and less growth in the economy. But my disagreement on the VAT issue is that this is a temporary issue. I mean, governments go through periods of, you know, fiscal deficits, etc. They come, they pass. I think we're in a process now of recovering economic growth, and so the gap will close. But what I feel is, though, is that this VAT increase, yes, it does. It's a low-hanging fruit. I think I mentioned this as the first point to say it's the most efficient way to raise money for government. Yes, it does raise, you know, in the billions, etc. But the problem is it gives politicians a free pass, politicians at least who were involved in the public financial mismanagement. It passes that on to the consumers who now have to pay in order to finance the gap, which has been largely due to misappropriation of public funds, but also as a result of slow growth.
Okay.
I think, you know, the benefit of being a political economist is that I can balance the two. And I think, you know, the consolidation has been there. We've made strong pronouncements, but government itself hasn't complied. You've got on the one hand an announcement by Pravin Gordhan that there's a moratorium on government posts. 2 weeks later, Department of Water and Sanitation advertised hundreds of jobs. So the problem is around the expenditure and also consolidating government. I think there are too many departments with duplication. And I think beyond cutting certain departments, I think we need to consolidate and make sure that we rationalize, A, the incentives we provide to the public, to the private sector, and B, the work and the mandate of all these government departments, because there's a lot of duplication and a leakage as a result of this.
Okay, you guys have been excellent. Thank you so much for making economics fun and easy to understand. Sia, thanks for being part of this conversation, and Tabby and Busi as well, and particularly for coming to the studio. We always appreciate that.